This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker. Is brought to you with compliments of Dis-Chem Baby City.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. And yes, it is Bump and Beyond with me, Yolandi Becker, on Hi FM. And as always, we're talking parenting. And today, as we are observing in October, pregnancy and baby loss awareness, it's a very important yet sensitive topic that we're talking about today. Something that, in all honesty, I haven't personally experienced, but of course, I know so many women and families, parents that have been affected by this. And this is why it's so important to talk about it, because it is important to normalize talking about things like this, because you can feel so isolated, I feel, when you are not talking about things like this. And you think it's only me, it's not happening, you don't know what help you can get for it, you don't know what's normal. But as always, to bring justice to this topic, in all honesty, there's a whole audience of people that's joining me today. Because again, like I said, I don't feel that I have the personal experience with it. And you know, I love sharing my personal, but that doesn't mean I shouldn't be pushed out of my comfort zone to talk about something that's hard to talk about. But that's why I got in the big guns today. And before he has joined me, Dr. Mahotu is here too. He's a specialist gynecologist and a fertility specialist at Femicare. So he is here to join me today. And I've got two perinatal bereavement trainers here, Michelle Groenewald and Saskia Williams, founder of the, it's a very, very long abbreviation, IFFAASA, the Infertility Awareness Association of South Africa. So thank you so much, everyone, for joining me. I really appreciate it. We've had this conversation before. So in essence, we are continuing a conversation that we've already started. So thank you so much for taking the time again to join me.
Thank you for having us on.
thank you.
Yes. So first, Dr. Mahotu, to jump right into it, I want to start the conversation because I don't want to waste any time. Last time already, we ran out of time. So we need to get into this as quickly as possible. I want to know, what is the most common causes of pregnancy loss?
That's a complicated question. The answer actually is, it depends. So you can divide pregnancy loss into the trimesters. It's easier for most people. So you get first trimester pregnancy loss, second trimester pregnancy loss. Third trimester, we are talking different realm. But yes, also third trimester. Now in the first trimester, the commonest causes of first trimester losses is genetic abnormalities, and that can either be chromosomal, it can be deletions on part of the chromosome, but it's genetic abnormalities. Second is early on infections, so you can have some infections that predispose you to pregnancy loss. And that also kind of goes into the second trimester. And then there's another condition called antiphospholipid syndrome. All it is, the big word, but all it is whilst your placenta is forming, you get little micro clots in that placenta. And obviously, it means if the placenta has some clots, there isn't enough blood supply to the placenta, and that dies off, and then that gives you a miscarriage. Okay, so it means that the mother has a problem, but that problem only shows up most of the time in pregnancy. So she makes micro clots that she doesn't feel because her veins are big, but when pregnancy comes along, then she can get that. Second trimester, also chromosomal abnormalities will give you.
Dr. Mahotu, before you go into that, like, can I just, because now we're talking about the first trimester and those type of things. You very specifically said some of that, especially with the blood clots now, is a mom's, that's like the mom, the problem is actually with the mom. Is there then a way that you can reduce your risk of miscarriage?
That's a specific
situation.
That's a very good question. And not just that, the best thing is which patients, the first question should be which patients will we screen? Which patients are actually high risk for first trimester miscarriages? So, the medical fraternity has actually been back and forth about what recurrent pregnancy loss is, which patients are at risk, etc. We've decided now, there's a bit of consensus that after two miscarriages, you should ideally be investigated. It means two miscarriages are enough for you to be investigated for all of these things that I'm talking about. Okay, remember that for some of them, it doesn't actually affect the future pregnancy. So, for example, if in this pregnancy I had a genetic abnormality, doesn't mean in the future pregnancy I'm going to have a genetic abnormality.
Oh, yeah. Because it might not show up in that baby's genes.
Yes, it's that specific baby's gene. But if I have antiphospholipid syndrome as the mother, that you have.
Yeah.
And that we can treat. So the workup, I don't want to get too technical, but the workup includes those conditions that we can do something about. And antiphospholipid syndrome is definitely one of them, that clotting abnormality. It means in the next pregnancy, we're going to give you blood thinners.
To help that it's not going to cause a miscarriage again. So now we come to the second trimester, common causes.
So the common causes of second trimester, your uterus is expanding now a bit more. So one of the main causes in that trimester is what we call cervical insufficiency. It means the inability of your cervix to maintain the pregnancy.
Oh.
Well, it means if you have a one history of second trimester miscarriages. Now, this is a personal thing. I told you that we investigate two previous miscarriages. But if it's a second trimester or even a third trimester pregnancy loss, that is enough to investigate that person or at least follow them up. Because it means the pregnancy was quite advanced. And usually for those ones, there are things that we can do to help mitigate the risk in those pregnancies.
Yeah.
So for example, if your cervix can't maintain a pregnancy, we put a stitch around the cervix. Just stitch the cervix at the right time, and the timing is important. Or we surveil, so we do surveillance on the cervix. We do a transvaginal ultrasound in the second trimester to see if the cervix, because it'll give us signs to say, okay, I can't maintain this pregnancy even before it happens. And if you see those signs, then you take them to theater and tie it up. But also infection. Infection is even more common in the second trimester. There is some, but to a lesser degree, also genetic abnormalities that can also give you second trimester miscarriage. In the third trimester, now we are talking about that's no longer a miscarriage. Remember, from 24 weeks, now we are talking, it's baby loss.
Yeah.
That's not a miscarriage. And that one, there's a lot more that can go wrong in the third trimester. So you can divide that into maternal causes and then fetal causes and then placental causes. And there's lots. So in that one, it means, for example, if you have what we call preeclampsia, which is a hypertensive emergency of pregnancy, or if you have diabetes that you get during pregnancy, or you have chronic diabetes, or the placenta stops working, what we call placental insufficiency, all of those can kill the baby.
No, okay. I mean, Dr. Mawote, you can hear that you know and you have so much experience. And I mean, just the way that you're talking about it, the knowledge is shining through. And I think you're already helping so many moms to kind of understand what is the risks, what can happen. So I'm very much looking forward to talking more about this.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker, is brought to you with compliments of Dis-Chem Baby City.
Yes, if you've only just joined me, you are on 101.9 High FM, and this is Bump and Beyond. And today we are talking about understanding miscarriage, and as we are, you know, observing Pregnancy and Baby Loss Awareness Month in October and want to talk about it. Of course, this is affects so many parents. It's really, I mean, I know of so many moms who also, I feel like in some ways it started off that they had a miscarriage a couple of times. And then obviously as Dr. Maotu, it's my guest, if you've just joined me, I've spoken about it, that after two miscarriages, then you should start investigating what's going on and if there's a reason for it. Because I assume that that's not normal if you're having two miscarriages. I mean, for me, I feel one miscarriage is not normal. But again, after two, definitely to start investigating. But on that note, I obviously always want you to be part of this question, this discussion, because again, I don't have personal experience and I do want to be sensitive on this topic. So please do send me a WhatsApp on 061-895-1019. Again, 061-895-1019. And let me know if you have any questions for the doctor, if you've experienced this, if you're worried about something, if you're pregnant. I mean, already when you were now talking, doctor, you were mentioning like there's different kind of causes for pregnancy loss, and you were speaking like there's first trimester, second trimester, different things that can cause it, and then after 24 weeks when we're looking also at the third trimester, it becomes then baby loss. It's no longer considered a miscarriage. And even when you were talking about, you said it's a very different realm that we're talking about when it's in that that place. One of the questions that we have gotten through now is, please, can you ask if Ecotrin can contribute to pregnancy loss?
No, the opposite. Ecotrin, remember we were talking about blood thinners. So
yes,
Ecotrin is kind of a blood thinner. It's aspirin, it's baby aspirin. So part of the treatment in antiphospholipid syndrome is actually aspirin. So we give them aspirin,
yes,
as part of our management for recurrent pregnancy loss. It also, Ecotrin, you'll see a lot of patients are on Ecotrin and should be on Ecotrin. And the reason for that is that it has other uses. So there's a lot of diseases that are caused by formation of the placenta. So if your placenta forms well enough, it prevents certain conditions. For example, the very common preeclampsia that we spoke about. So hypertensive disorders, the severe forms, the preeclamptic forms, are actually prevented by giving those patients aspirin. So we use it quite a lot. And if you have antiphospholipid syndrome, you will be on aspirin. It's just that you'll be on also the more potent clexane, which is heparin. But those are injections. So you might have to be on injections until just before delivery to try and prevent baby loss.
Because now, again, you spoke about the different trimesters. Is it more common to have miscarriages in the beginning of the pregnancy than later? Is it a lot more common in the first trimester, second trimester, or third trimester?
You're 100% correct. So most miscarriages happen early on. There's actually a baby loss pyramid. I like the fact that you say you haven't gone through this. Let me just give you a few statistics, because you might have gone through this. You might just not know.
Yes.
So 80% of people have had a miscarriage, sexually active women. 60% don't know they've had a miscarriage. So maybe 2 weeks late, or you're thinking, wow, I was stressed this month. My period's a bit heavier than normal, but actually it was a miscarriage. So a lot of women have miscarriages. Just that majority of those women don't know they've had a miscarriage, which is a different thing altogether.
Yeah.
So, but yes, majority happens early on. That's why that's why we worry more if it's a second trimester miscarriage or a third trimester miscarriage, because we know that the reason why we say, okay, after two miscarriages, because after one miscarriage, first, the majority of the population has had one miscarriage. So we kind of say, okay, you've had one miscarriage, it happens. But after two, that's a pattern. That becomes a pattern for you. So that's why we start investigating you then.
But I can then also understand why the medical fraternity was a little bit, you know, torn between how many miscarriages, because in the end of the day, you might not even know that you had a miscarriage. And then is it really one? And you know, how do you know how many you've had? When should you start worrying? That type of thing. So I guess I can understand. But again, I mean, I've already asked the question now, especially with the first trimester, there is obviously certain things that you, there are ways to prevent and I didn't even do that. Now that I think about it, I didn't even go for a checkup before I decided to get pregnant, to be honest. I was like, I'm healthy, I'm super young. I was 25, so I don't think I was responsible or smart enough to even think about that. But should you actually be going for a health check before you decide to become, I mean, obviously not everyone decides to get pregnant, that we also have to keep in mind, but should you be going for a checkup before you, will that reduce, is there ways to reduce your risk of miscarriage?
100%. We call it preconception counseling and preconception checkup. In an ideal world, everyone should have a preconception visit to your doctor.
No.
100%. But we know that, I mean, realistically speaking, in South Africa, a lot of people don't have access to, never mind the gynecologist or the specialist in reproductive medicine, just the doctor. A lot of people don't have access to just a plain doctor. So majority of patients in South Africa, but Africa, don't have that luxury of doing preconception doctor visit.
Yeah. Oh, and I mean, it is sad, but would that then be reduce your risk? Is there other ways to reduce the risk of miscarriage?
There is, because there are risk factors to miscarriage, which we haven't actually spoken about, like smoking, heavy alcohol intake. Being obese is an independent risk factor for miscarriage. So just a healthy lifestyle. If you lose weight, we normally say, I mean, let's say you're morbidly obese, even if you lose 5 to 10% of your body weight, that makes a huge difference. Mm. Not just with the miscarriage, also with your chances of falling pregnant. Smoking is a big one in our community. Not just smoking, but also drug use is a big one in our community. So there isn't safe smoking. It can't be like, okay, one or two is not bad for the baby. No, there's no safe smoking and there's no safe drinking during pregnancy. So it's zero alcohol intake, zero smoking. That makes a big difference. But a generally healthy lifestyle, actually.
I mean, this is again, and I've said this many times on my show as well, that these are actually things we know. You shouldn't be smoking, you shouldn't be drinking, you should be exercising, you should be healthy, you should be eating a varied diet. We know that. I mean, in the end of the day, maybe also your risk factors, because I do also know, like I said, some people don't purposefully want to fall pregnant. It's by accident and you might only realize a little bit later. How big is the risk? Like, I want to say, like, if you're 12 weeks, the first 3 months, first trimester, if you're unaware that you're pregnant, drinking and smoking, how much at a higher risk are you?
Your smoking gives you a big risk.
So you shouldn't be ever smoking.
You shouldn't be smoking at all. Remember, the thing about miscarriage, if you look at how you increase the risk of miscarriage, one of the main things, and we've spoken about it briefly, is how the placenta forms.
Yeah.
And the placenta is fully formed at 16 weeks.
Oh, wow.
16 weeks. That's why we say, okay, if now you're smoking through your first trimester up till 16 weeks, chances are that placenta didn't form normally, which is going to create all of these other problems. Baby won't grow properly. You will have preeclampsia, but you will have a miscarriage, an increase in chance of miscarriage. Yeah. So, yeah, once you find out you're pregnant, you should actually just stop before.
You shouldn't be smoking. You know that smoking is not good for you.
You shouldn't be doing these things.
Okay, let's say now you are pregnant, whichever trimester you are in. If you've just joined me, you are on 101.9 High FM, and this is Bump and Beyond. And today we are talking about miscarriage, the risk involved with it. My guest today is specialist, Dr. Tato Mahotu, talking. He's also a fertility specialist, and he's helping me talk through all these things. Are there warning signs, like, of a miscarriage? I mean, would you know you're going to have a miscarriage? I mean, you said like 60% of women even don't know in the beginning, first trimester, that they are that they've had a miscarriage. Is there any warning signs?
This is one of the things that patients who are pregnant should do is book early, because we speak, and this is what we teach the midwives, and the midwife sees the patients, is there are danger signs for pregnancy. So the main danger sign for miscarriage early on is bleeding. You shouldn't be bleeding if you're pregnant.
Okay.
So that's the main danger sign, but obviously you can also have abdominal pain. But the vast majority, there isn't like a warning shot. You start bleeding and then you have the miscarriage at that time.
Yeah. So actually by the time you're bleeding, it's too late.
It's too late. Yeah, that's the thing. Obviously, it becomes a bit different the more advanced the pregnancy is.
Mm.
So in the third trimester, there are lots of warning signs. If the baby stops moving, for example,
yeah,
the baby moving a certain number of times, the baby's not moving as much, any PV bleeding, if the water breaks, if you're having a discharge, okay, and the discharge, remember, we're talking now of infections, etc. Also, if your urine is burning, even in the first trimester, like burning urine, if you're having frequency in urinating, also another danger sign. It means
frequency in urinating. Excuse me, when I was pregnant in my third trimester, I was peeing all the time.
Exactly. So it's dysuria is different. And I'm talking now in the first trimester. So in the third trimester, because the baby's pushing against your bladder, now you have a different kind of frequency.
Yeah.
You're going for different reasons. But early on, it's a danger sign.
Okay. Unfortunately, when it does happen, like you said, if there is then bleeding, often it is too late and you will experience a miscarriage. What are the medical steps then taken after the miscarriage to also ensure like health and safety?
The biggest thing is the uterus must be empty. Okay,
yeah.
So that's the biggest thing. So one of the common, well, it used to be a big problem, it's still a problem, but to a lesser extent, is what we call septic miscarriages or sepsis following a miscarriage. It means there's products of conception that are left in the uterus, and then you get an infection. They get secondarily infected, and that's very dangerous for the patient. You might lose your life, but you might also lose the womb as part of management of that. So that's the primary thing. The second thing is, depending on the type of miscarriage, we usually cover you as a result with antibiotics to prevent those infections. And then after that, remember, your body takes up to 6 weeks to return to normal. It's not like you will now menstruate. You're not expecting you to menstruate immediately. So your body takes that much. But also a big thing that we forget is contraception, family planning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, because you can again get pregnant even after a miscarriage.
You can, because we don't know when you're ovulating.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And would your chances be higher to have another miscarriage if you've already had a miscarriage?
Yeah, there are studies that have been done on that. And what the studies showed is if you have a miscarriage and you fall pregnant quickly after the miscarriage, then there is a higher risk of miscarriage. Usually, in the past, we used to say wait 6 months, full 6 months before you fall pregnant again. We found that about 3 months is acceptable, depending, but about 3 months is acceptable. Within 3 months, you can still fall pregnant, but you must know that your risks are actually increased for a repeat miscarriage. Remember, your body must go back to normal.
Yeah, and I mean, I presume that this is also quite a big thing for your body. I mean, in some ways, if you just think, I mean, I'm now asking, actually, I'm just thinking that personally, I mean, starting to grow life within you is already on your body quite a big thing. And then losing that is, you know, exceptional for your body. So it does need some time to recover, of course, even if it's not a full pregnancy. So I think my next question probably is for Saskia and Michelle more related, because again, now we've spoken about what the medical steps are. But now I'm wondering, obviously, how can we cope with the grief and the emotional change after, because that's also, I don't want to take away from it, because first trimester, I feel definitely can be just as hard as later. But how can we deal with that grief and that emotional pain? Saskia or Michelle?
Okay, so there are a few things that you can do. You need to also remember that it happens to 1 in 4 pregnancies. So you're not alone, but your grief is valid. And you need to allow yourself time to grieve at your own pace. There's no set time limit for grief. It's a very personal journey. And it's okay to grieve in your own way and at your own pace. And every feeling is valid. So anger, sadness, frustration, confusion, guilt. Us women are very good at feeling guilt for anything, let alone when we lose our babies, because it's happened in our bodies, right? And it's happened on our watch. So you have to allow yourself and be patient with yourself, that time to grieve, and also seek support. There's a group that Michelle will talk to you about now, which is a support group for baby loss and pregnancy loss in Joburg. And there are others around the country too, and online ones too. And it's a good idea to seek support and when you surround yourself with people who understand what you've been through, you feel heard and you don't feel alone. And also what's very important is to do something to honor your baby. So we encourage naming their babies, even if they lose their baby at an early stage. Sometimes for religious purposes, etc., people can't, but we encourage them to name their babies if they can and do something in honor of them. So the 15th of October is Pregnancy and Baby Loss Awareness Day, and there's a wave of light that is global. So at 7 o'clock local time, you light a candle in honor of your babies. And the idea is that it's 7 o'clock somewhere around the world the whole day. So it creates a wave of light between 7 and 8 o'clock and it's so powerful on social media because people post their pictures and their candles, and they have different setups for their candles. So they might have a scan picture or a baby picture, and it's very powerful. And even just doing that every year in honor of your baby really does bring a lot of comfort.
Oh, that is so beautiful. I love that. I'm a little teary.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker. It's brought to you with compliments of Dis-Chem Baby City.
If you've just joined me, we're close to the end of the show, but don't despair. Luckily, this and all of my shows are available as a podcast on Chai FM for you to go listen to. Today, we spoke about miscarriage, the common causes of it, the risks of it, ways that you can try to prevent it, the commonness of it. I mean, Saskia, one of my guests today, was just saying that 1 in 4 women actually experience miscarriage. That's a lot. So if you're 4 of your friends together, most probably one of you have experienced. I mean, and just thinking about my friend group that I regularly see, I know I feel it was more than 1 out of us 4. Anyway, before you guys go though, and thank you so much for joining me and talking about this. But before you go, and I don't know, maybe Michelle, you can answer this. How can partners and loved ones best support someone who has experienced baby loss? Because again, I mean, and I don't want to take away from any trimester, but sometimes I feel like, especially when it's in the beginning, people don't give the same courtesy to it. But how can we as, like, us, the community and our loved one, how can we support people in this?
Well, one of the big things that I read on Facebook posts and most of the pregnancy loss and baby loss support groups that I belong to is say their name. So if your baby has been named, then remember your baby, say baby's name, remember the birthdays. I know on our Empty Wombs group, and if I may just give a shout out to all the moms that are listening today, love you all so, so much. But what we do in our group is that we have a calendar of all the babies, and we always wish the moms well on the baby's birthday, that we're thinking of them, that we're remembering their babies with them on that day. Another thing that we do as well is that we like to give something significant. So we've come to know that in Empty Wombs, for example, the yesterday, today, and tomorrow bush is very, very significant. And we give that when a mom has suffered a great, great loss, then we like to give a bush like that. That is, it's a very slow growing bush. It's a very beautiful smelling bush, and it's very, very significant in you know, the baby loss realm. So just a few things like that, but I think the main one is just to remember them, say their name. I heard a beautiful thing the other day. I read a beautiful thing that someone said. I heard the most beautiful thing today. Somebody said my baby's name. Oh, that is very powerful. Just remember and validate, acknowledge.
I think that's
the most important one.
And I mean, that's beautiful. I think that's a very good note to kind of end off with. Michelle, Saskia, where can people reach? Where can they get their support? Where can they join this group if they need help?
Well, it's the Empty Womb Support Group, Baby Loss and Support Group, but I think the easiest way is actually to go to the IFASA website. Hey, Sask, I think the IFASA website, which is www.ifaasa.co.za, and there's a whole section there on baby loss and pregnancy loss, and you can read other stories as well. I also think sharing your story is also extremely powerful, to know that you're not alone in what you're going through.
And yes. On social media as well.
And yes. On social media.
And maybe you guys can also just share, when is it? The 15th of October, you said.
Yeah.
Is where at 7 p.m. we light a candle in remembrance of our babies.
Yes.
That we've lost. Oh, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, again,
I feel like we can talk about this again. I will have a look out. It's been so wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Mawoto. You've been so wonderful and so knowledgeable about it. And thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. Have a good day.